folks. In this podcast, I speak with Dr. Ryan Fulp about The Inkwell, which is a literary collective founded in China in 2015. The Inkwell offers free creative writing workshops to the general public, and in this podcast, Fulp shares how he got it all started and what led him to come out to China, where he has lived for the duration of 9 years. So sit back and enjoy the show. Well, I'm now in the tea house with Dr. Ryan Fulp. And what tea are you drinking right now?
I'm drinking toasted pu'er cha.
And this tea house is a little bit special. How did you find this one?
This one is located close to Shanghai's Bund, and it's part of a very popular chain of tea houses that are becoming very popular in Shanghai right now as some of the commercial spaces are opening up in Shanghai. These large tea houses are becoming increasingly popular. They really go out of their way to make the experience special, the way that they prepare the tea, the way they design their places, the indirect lighting, you know, just the silence. They really go out of their way to make the whole process something special.
Yeah, and we were served by a man today, but mm-hmm. You were saying that it's different if served tea by a woman.
Generally they have the kind of traditional tea outfit that they wear for it that has kind of the longer sleeves, and it's beautiful to watch them, you know, prepare your tea, you know, where they wash the tea, they warm the cup, and, you know, going through the process of just kind of preparing the tea for you to drink. It's a beautiful process to watch.
It sounds lovely. Okay, well, we're going to be sharing a little bit more about Inkwell, of which Ryan is the founder. But before that, could you tell me where you're from?
Well, originally from Texas. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, for the most part.
Ah.
And took a kind of long journey to get to China, but I've been here for about 9 years now, and after 9 years in Shanghai, I'm pretty sure this is home at this point.
Yeah. And what brought you to China?
I came here first as just kind of a tourist, and I was traveling through China, visiting different cities, just trying to get kind of a general feel for China. And at that point, I was working in as a professor in Korea and South Korea. And then I got a job offer from the University of Michigan, was starting up a joint institute here in Shanghai at Shanghai Jiao Tong University. And they were looking for more faculty, and I thought it sounded like a good opportunity. And I absolutely loved Shanghai when I first came here, and I thought, sure, let's go for it. Like, I was getting a little tired of Korea. And
was it easy to find a place to live, or did your work help with that?
No, like, at that point, I was coming to Jiao Tong University really early compared to what most people did, and, like, yeah, the framework for getting new faculty settled had not been established at Jiao Tong yet. So, like, all faculty were essentially on their own. And I had no idea how to find an apartment in Shanghai. Mm. And I found out that I had way too little money with me.
Ah.
Like, because I was coming from Korea and I had only brought, like, when I first came into China, I had a bunch of money with me that I had converted from Korean won into Chinese RMB. And I had already felt like a drug dealer coming into China because I had these, like, bricks of cash in my backpack. And because, like, that was the only way I could think of, because I knew you couldn't bring more than $10,000 in. So I had $9,000 in cash in my backpack. And but the highest denomination of currency in China is 100 RMB, which is about $15. So as a result, it's just these piles of RMB that you have. And, I had no idea how to find an apartment. And I was just, I did the things that you would think of. I looked at some of the popular expat websites, and then I finally found an apartment through Craigslist, of all places. I found a listing on Craigslist for an apartment, and then that led me to a real estate agent who spoke English.
Wow.
And once I found a real estate agent who spoke English, then, like, through a bunch of extra fines and fees, essentially, for not being a native Chinese speaker, I got an apartment, and I got a killer apartment, actually. My first apartment in Shanghai was phenomenal, and I paid nothing for it compared to today's rates.
Where was it?
I lived really close to this tea house, actually. I just lived on the other side of Suzhou Creek, and I had a beautiful view of the Bund and the river, and I could see the Pearl Tower, and I was watching Shanghai Tower get built out my window, and... You know, it was a beautiful two-story loft apartment. Yeah. And, yeah, like, I paid, what, $5,000 a month, and...
Yeah. Do you have a favorite place in Shanghai, or some favorite places that you like to go to?
Definitely. There's a few places I always kind of come back to. You know, I really like the bike trail on the Pudong side of the Huangpu River. Mm-hmm. Like, especially once you get up on the north side of it a little bit. Like, you get... by yourself a lot, and it's just a beautiful place to bike, and you know, it's a beautiful place to sit, and like, being in a city of 25 million people, generally a lot of it is trying to find just a corner of it that makes it feel like it's yours and that you're not sharing so much.
So how was Inkwell formed?
Inkwell was kind of formed out of necessity. I got here and there was nothing else here. I couldn't find a creative writing spot that let me share work with other creative writers, and I couldn't find much of a creative writing community here. And like, now that I've been here for a while, I know that there were a few small groups that were out there, but like, there was nothing big and organized and very public at all. And I was a creative writing lecturer. And so I did the only thing I could think of, which is I just put on my WeChat that I was a creative writing professor, and if you wanted to meet with me at a bar, we could swap work. And, you know, we would just exchange work and, yeah, have a few beers. And I called it Poetry, Prose, and Pubs at first. I thought it was kind of funny. And I thought it'd be good just to, you know, I wanted it to be really casual and... You know, not at all pretentious and, you know, just a group of people who were gathering and wanted to get people to read their work and get some feedback on it and have a little bit of writing accountability. And, you know, and the first few meetings were very, you know, they were very just kind of unplanned for the most part. Like, I'm kind of embarrassed because there's, like, no photos of Inkwell for the first 3 years.
Is that because it was in a pub?
Yeah, well, it was in a pub, but we also... always kind of thought that this was our last meeting. Like, we were never trying to start a big literary organization.
Right.
Like, we just always assumed, like, ah, maybe there'll be another meeting next week, maybe there won't be, who knows. Like, we weren't trying to build a big literary group at all. We were just there to swap work. And, you know, we just kind of always assumed that, yeah, maybe there'll be another meeting next week, maybe there won't, and either way, it would be fine. But we were running into some problems pretty quickly because we were getting popular accidentally. Yeah, because we went from, like, the first meeting we had, like, five people in it. It was me, three guys, and one very drunk Irish girl. we just swapped some work and chatted, and it was kind of noisy, so we kept moving around to different bars trying to find a good quiet one. And that worked really well until the winter started, and then we started to find indoor spaces. But, we had a problem with people, like, because that first meeting we had about five people. But then about, 4 months later or so, it really blew up. We had, you know, 20, 30 people at a meeting.
Wow, that's a lot.
And, like, I don't even know how it got that big. People started telling their friends, and then people started inviting other people. And then we had quite a group for the fact that, like... You know, it wasn't really planned or anything. We weren't even trying. And, you know, I was just kind of there facilitating a workshop and doing whatever I could to just get people writing.
Where were people from?
It was mostly expats who were here in Shanghai. Like, it was overwhelmingly expats. You know, we had some... Chinese nationals who had gotten educated in America, essentially, and come back to Shanghai and were interested in creative writing. But, it was overwhelmingly a very expat population when it comes to English creative writing here in the city.
What have you enjoyed the most about Inkwell over the years?
In terms of what I've enjoyed, I think it's just the people. Like, you know, part of the reason I think I've stayed abroad for so many years is that I find people that amaze me. Like, the life abroad attracts a certain kind of person because a certain kind of person is drawn to the idea of packing up all of their stuff, moving to the other side of the world, and starting over to try something. And as a result, when you look at the expat community, like, you see it as full of these people that are just natural adventurers, and they're just naturally willing to take a chance and go and do something. And, you know, a lot of them are interested in writing about it and talking about it, and a lot of them have great stories. And, you know, as a result, those people are the ones that always amaze me as kind of the organizer of Inkwell. And they're the people who I love working with and talking to is are those people. I think that's what really was the fuel for it at the very beginning, was just this group of people who were just adventurers and had stories to tell. A lot of them had, especially I think corresponding with the rise of teaching requirements in China. China started really upgrading the requirements for teachers in Shanghai. You started having to have degrees in your field. You had to have years of experience in order to get a job here. And as a result, a lot of the kind of, you know, drunken, strung out teachers that China was kind of famous for earlier in the 90s, they really started vanishing. And a more professional class of teachers started coming into Shanghai who had education, who had background, who were ambitious, and they wanted to do things. And it really created a great energy to start trying to create something.
What have been the challenges?
There's a lot of challenges. One is finding leadership for Inkwell. It's just, you know, because we're very dependent upon expats, you know, the leadership of Inkwell changes over rather quickly. You know, people come and go from Inkwell a lot because they're coming and going from Shanghai. And it's always sad to see great and qualified people go, but, you know, that's the nature of great and qualified people, is that they have, and they find opportunities that motivate them. And sometimes it's in the city and sometimes it's not. The status of Inkwell in China is probably our biggest constant problem, which is that, you know, in America, we would have immediately filed and become a nonprofit organization. But, like, the idea of the nonprofit in China is a very nebulous idea because it, you know, in America, it's a couple of forms and then you can register to be a nonprofit entity and then you can start doing things as an entity. But, like, in China, that's a lot more complicated. You have to register as a nonprofit, and it's an incredibly complicated requirement that's incredibly expensive to register as a nonprofit inside of China. And very few places can actually afford to do that. So, as a result, like, almost all nonprofits essentially end up filing to become companies.
Right.
And they file as for-profit companies just like everything else it is, just because the requirements for a for-profit company are so much easier to meet than the requirements for being a nonprofit. And you have the same tax liabilities of reporting and, you know, reporting your income that most people just choose to be a for-profit company and go that route. And, you know, but, like, I have worked really hard to kind of keep money out of Inkwell just because I knew that there wasn't a ton of money in creative writing. And I wanted people to be there for the writing. And, but, like, there is limits to what you can do when you're not taking money.
Right.
And there's limits to the resources that you can provide when you're not doing, when you don't have any money.
Yeah. What different types of Inkwell groups are there?
There's a lot of different kinds of Inkwell groups. Inside of Shanghai, where we started, there's by far the most diverse groups that are available, you know, where we're doing, we have specialty workshops in fiction, nonfiction, poetry, translation, screenwriting, and we also have short prose reading groups. I like to kind of think of it as the Lazy Person's Reading Club, which, because we do all of our reading at meeting and there's no pre-reading required for it. So we're looking primarily at shorter essays, novel excerpts, short stories, and it allows you to read at the meeting and then discuss at the meeting. And that's been probably our most popular program that we've launched. And then we also have a poetry discussion group, and then there's always kind of seasonal groups that Inkwell has, as well as the affiliates, which is, you know, Inkwell got popular enough and we had enough people interested in Inkwell that we started opening up Inkwells in other cities across China. And affiliates are smaller groups. Generally, you know, they're much smaller than the hundreds of members that are in Shanghai. That's generally, you know, less than 100 people or so. And they're in another city in China, and they do kind of everything as one big group. And it's just kind of, Inkwell kind of serves as a networking spot for people interested in writing and literature to meet and think about what they want to do.
What do people come from all walks of life, or does it attract a certain person?
I feel like we're getting more diverse these days than we've gotten before, for a lot of reasons. Like, one, Inkwell is becoming more known. So as a result, we're getting a kind of a, because I feel like Inkwell was known among a very small community for a very long time, and we drew very heavily from that community. But, you know, as we've done more and more community outreach events, people are becoming more aware of Inkwell. And, yeah, it's gotten easier to kind of get the word out. Also, because of the current situation in China, like, the expat population in China has dropped tremendously in the last year or so, and a lot of the new members that have been taking place in Inkwell have been, you know, local Chinese writers who are becoming more involved in Inkwell. And that's been kind of great, actually. I've really enjoyed having a more diverse population inside of the workshops. And I'm really glad that more local Chinese are getting interested in creative writing. And I would love to offer more creative writing opportunities in the future exclusively in Chinese, if we could. As always, it's not a problem of... The only problem is finding a leader for it, which is always the question you have to ask yourself first when we're doing something in Inkwell. But, yeah, like, it's, yeah, there are both amateurs who are just people who have no idea what they're doing and they're coming for the first time to write their first story. And then there's some people who are very serious about it and are published authors and have some books out there.
What happens if there's a difficult group dynamic?
I do the best I can to try to make sure that Inkwell maintains a sense very strongly of respect in terms of what's happening inside of the workshop. And that, you know, we try to make sure that we're talking about the work instead of the writer, and that we're also talking about the work in a way that is useful for the writer. You know, insulting a work is not something that's constructive to the writer. You know, it's, plus it's just easy to insult a work. You can insult anything that you want without any real criticism or reflection. You know, it's about giving comments and thinking about what your reading experience is as a reader, and then thinking about how that can translate into commentary for a writer that they, in which, can turn around and use as part of feedback to be revising their work in the future. And, yeah, like, it's definitely, there are group dynamics that get awkward and difficult at times in Inkwell. We're a very open community, and as a result, anybody can join Inkwell. And because anybody can join, sometimes, yeah, people don't fit in immediately. But I find that over time, they either get with that program of, you know, community and respect, and that this is what Inkwell is about, or they discover that this just isn't the kind of place where they want it to be, and they go find another home somewhere else.
Yeah. One of the things that I've noticed about you, and you're Dr. Ryan Thorpe, and you've got actually two doctorates, PhDs, and when you are with people, you're very open and very encouraging towards others. And I just wondered, it really takes quite a lot for someone to be like that. You know, I didn't feel at all intimidated when I brought my writing to you or others. And I just think that's a real special quality. Is there any influence that you've had within your life that has given you that quality?
I think it's probably my first job more than anything else.
Right.
Like, my first job was as a kindergarten teacher.
Mm.
And I taught kindergarten and elementary school first.
Mm.
And as soon as I finished my undergrad, I was teaching kindergarten and elementary school in Korea.
Mm.
And I learned a handful of deep truths about teaching really early in my career. One is that you got to be excited about whatever it is that you're teaching, or your kids are never going to be excited about it, because kids can pick up on energy super quick. Like, if this is not something that you believe in, and if you're not believing what you're talking about inside of a classroom or when you sit down with somebody, like, they'll never go there with you. Two, I learned that when you talk to children, you get on their level and you squat down, you look them in the eye, and you make them feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a moment when learning can start to take place. And, finally, it's just a matter of patience. Like, being there in an elementary school classroom in Korea, like, there was 400 things I didn't understand at any one point of time. And my kids were teaching me all sorts of things about how to survive, and they were giving me bits and tips of how to say this and that in Korean just to survive. And, I realized that, you can't be in a position ever in your life to where you're some know-it-all that just hands down knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That knowledge is always a collaborative idea, and that, you're in this together. And, like, this may be in a moment where I know a lot of things, but, one, I'm just one reader. And in a world of creative writing, a creative writing teacher is always just another reader.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you're wrong as a reader.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're a very experienced reader, sometimes you're wrong. And, you read a text incorrectly, you don't see it, you're not following somebody else, and you have to bring that humility of a reader with you when you're sitting down to talk to somebody, because you may not have gotten it right. And you need to be willing to listen to somebody talk about their work a little bit to be able to know that, this is what they want to do, and make sure that the kind of comments that you're leaving for their work are the kind that are going to edge the piece in the direction that they wanted to go. Like, they had a vision for this piece.
Mm.
Writing is something that is incredibly labor intensive.
Mm.
And it takes time and energy and heart to sit down there at that keyboard and, be punching out work. And if somebody has the courage to bring you their work, as a teacher, you have to have the patience and the courage to listen and try to help them in whatever way you can.
Mm-hmm. What topics do writers tend to write about?
It really depends on the workshop. I find that we're a pretty experimental bunch for the most part. And I find that we're almost deeply experimental by accident a lot of the time, because a lot of times writers are pretty new and they're not sure what is normal and not normal in a story. And they just kind of write what they want to write, and they write what interests them. And that makes them so much fun to work with, because they're like, I have no idea if this is even a story. And then when somebody tells me that right before they hand me the story, I'm deeply interested to see what it is that they are about to hand me, because who knows what is going on in this person's head that this might or might not be a story.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's read it. Let's talk about whether or not it's a story.
What suggestions would you have for others if they wanted to set up a writing organization abroad? I think you're the only person I've met who's done that. You're one of a kind, Dr. Reinfeld.
I definitely wasn't trying to be. It was something that has become an increasingly large part of my life, and it's something that, Inkwell keeps expanding. Mike is starting an America branch of Inkwell,
right,
which in New Jersey. I'm really excited about that, and Brady's going to be starting up an Inkwell in Peru.
It's spreading to different countries.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And these are just people who used to be a part of Inkwell here, and they just wanted to bring that spirit with them wherever they go. And I guess that's one of the perks of being a completely free organization.
Mm-hmm.
I give them the tools and the background and the guidelines that we have, and I'm just like, go and make something of this. And, have fun with it. But in terms of like starting a writing organization, one, I would just realize that you can't be an expert in all kinds of writing, and that, you know, you're going to need to find help, and you're going to need to be flexible, and, you know, you're going to need to be very open-minded about what it is. You know, a lot of people, when I tell them what Inkwell is, they think it's a lot more than what it actually is. You know, they're like, oh, like, people often ask if they can come to the Inkwell office. And I'm like, there is no office. I got a small study at home that has a poster on it from Inkwell, and that's the closest thing to an Inkwell office that we have. You know, people assume that, yeah, like, oh, is Inkwell going to pay for this? I'm like, Inkwell doesn't have a bank account, okay? Like, Inkwell can't buy coffee, okay? Inkwell can't buy anything. I can buy you a cup of coffee, but Inkwell has zero funds for anything. So yeah, I think you have to really kind of set your expectations about what it is that you can achieve. Realize that as the organizer, you're going to lose some money. Like, you know, even if you keep your organization really small, there's going to be a few costs that come into it as the organizer. And, you know, you just have to be patient about, you know, what it is that you're doing. And yeah, if you're really passionate about it, you know, just shoot me a message on the Inkwell website, and if you're somewhere else in the world, and I'd be happy to, you know, give you some advice.
And also, not to mention, you've got a book out with Routledge. What's it called again, and where can we find it?
I have a book out from Routledge called Teaching Second Language Creative Writing, which is kind of looking at some of, you know, because creative writing, ultimately, like when we think about writing now, we always think of it as kind of a process-oriented activity, to where we think of it as, you know, oh, I've got a writing process and these are the steps I'm going to. But workshop has a really hard time being process-oriented, actually. Like when you really think about workshop, it's a very product-oriented orientation, to where, you know, you bring your product to the workshop. The workshop critiques it and sends it back to you, and then it's up to you to decide what to do with these comments. And, you know, you realize that there needs to be skills that are taught at some point. And so I really see second language creative writing as an opportunity to kind of take a step back for creative writing and think about what are exactly the skills that we need to be giving writers in a creative writing class, and how do we move past this workshop model that has dominated especially early creative writing education for so long. And this was a model that was never intended to teach early creative writing, but, you know, because when you think about early creative writing, like the workshop model as we know it now was something that was, one, created for the convenience of the instructor, for these people who were temporarily coming into workshops, and for them to do as little work as possible because they were often celebrity writers who were coming in. It was also a model that was intended for experienced writers. You know, this was a graduate school model that was created for people who are already experienced, knowledgeable writers to come in and give feedback on each other's work. So if you have a group of novices that are not super experienced writers, like you just have them responding to each other as readers, which is good, but only if they realize that's exactly what they're doing. And it's also realizing that as an instructor of creative writing, there is a real responsibility, especially in second language creative writing, where it has to be about process. Because, you know, all you're trying to do is get students to both write a little bit better, but also get more familiar with the language, get more confident with the language, see that creativity is a part of language learning. And, you know, and as a result, we can make it more of a process. And I think that's mostly about what my book really focuses on.
And which authors and writers inspire you the most?
The writers that I kind of turn to at different times, yeah, they really change depending on kind of the mood that I'm in. Some of them are kind of classic writers, you know. I've read A Moveable Feast by Hemingway I don't know how many times, just because I find that it's such a book about being abroad and finding a way to honestly tell a story about being abroad. Italo Calvino's books are often a form of real inspiration for me, especially Invisible Cities. Invisible Cities is a book I've read 20 times probably, and because I think it really touches on the idea of what a city means to us, and how do we interpret a city, and how do we build up a city in our minds. And that means a lot to me, both as an expat and as a writer. And then the work of Wendy Bishop, she was a creative writing theorist who really started, was the first one to kind of be thinking about an overall theory of writing, not just of creative writing, but of composition as well. And how do these different forms of writing speak to each other? And I found her work deeply inspirational. And she died in the early 2000s. But yeah, like her main book was called Released into Language. And I've read it many times.
Well, thank you. It's so good to talk with you about the Inkwell and find out more. And if people look in the links, then you'll see all the connections to Dr. Ryan Thorpe's Inkwell website and the groups that he runs. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jane.
You've been listening into the Jane Nicola Soundvibe podcast, and in this pod I've been speaking with Dr. Ryan Thorpe about the Inkwell and his life in China. If you'd like to hear more about other writers, creators, musicians, producers, poets and musicians from all over the globe, then you might like to subscribe to keep in touch. Thanks for hanging out with us.